Hey, how about that? Mike DeRocco, you like that?
I was stunned that my name got edited in there. I was waiting for a Mark Long thing so I could go, sorry.
No. Well, Jackson, do you believe in miracles? We have our own Christmas miracle right here. D-Rock is with us from ESPN. How many different outlets have you covered between the Jags and the Gators? Have you covered those teams for?
The TU, ESPN, and I guess that's it.
It just seems like a lot more than that. I don't know.
That's because I'm old and I've been around long.
You have been around a long time. But Mark Long is on assignment today.
He's on McElwain watch.
Yes, he is. And apparently, I mean, that's as close to a done deal as it can be, it appears, right?
I mean, it would be stunning if he left out of McElwain's house and just shrugged his shoulders and said, we got nothing.
Yeah, you know? On to the next one.
Yeah, next guy. Go back to Ron Zook. Here's number three again.
One of the many things we like about D-Rock is he comes in today and says, what level of inappropriateness are you expecting out of me?
As I sub in for Mark Long.
You don't have to be Mark Long. You just have to be yourself. That's why we have you in here.
Well, the readers, listeners tune in on Wednesday, I'm sure, to find out just how inappropriate Mark Long is going to be on Wednesday. I don't want them to turn the radio off because I'm actually politically correct and not going to insult anybody or, you know, rip the programming schedule on Wednesday night or anything like that. You know, I don't know.
That's a one-time thing. It's a one-time thing. It's okay. Hey, you can feel free because probably what will happen is if people don't catch your name right at the top of the show, they might tune in and not realize it. They'll say, oh, it's Wednesday, it's Mark Long. So you can say anything you like and he'll get blamed for it pretty much.
I can live with that. See, that's why we should have just left it Mark Long in the beginning.
Maybe we should have, but it's too late for that now. We can't go back in hindsight. Mike DeRocco from ESPN here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks with you on Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. D-Rock, it's been a while since you joined us. And we appreciate you coming in today, but I guess really since probably about training camp was probably the last time you filled in. Was it that long ago? Or
I seem to remember being in here early in the season.
Maybe it was early in the year.
Yeah, like early, or might have been during training camp too. Who knows?
It's been at least a couple months, though.
Absolutely.
Right, since you've been in four
Ratings
games
have
ago.
Recovered since my last
Finally.
Appearance.
Whew. I mean, I think we're strong enough now. We may be in one of those windows, an unrated period right now, so we're safe having you back today. But a month ago in the season, you know, football teams like to break things down into quarters. At least some coaches do like to approach it from that standpoint. Three quarters into this season, what are you most surprised about, good or bad, or maybe good and bad, about this Jaguar team?
Well, I mean, I think the one thing that's probably most surprised me and that has been most disappointing to me has been the lack of impact Toby Gerhart's had, the way the offensive line has played, the fact that Luke Jokel hasn't developed maybe as quickly as everybody would have hoped. So I guess those are surprises and disappointments at the same time. You know, Sendarek Marks playing as well as he has. I mean, I thought he would be a very good player for this team, but he's playing at a Pro Bowl level, so that's certainly a surprise for me. And it's certainly an interesting thing when you consider, and someone was telling us this the other day, you know, usually when guys play like this to get that next contract, to get their bigger contract.
Right.
Sendarek got it last year and is actually playing better than he did last year to get the contract. So I think those, pretty much everything else has kind of gone the way we thought, I think. You know, Bortles has developed and started to look okay again. But I don't necessarily think there's anything too shockingly surprising for me.
When you look at, let's start with the O-line. You talk about Jokel talking with Loggeman yesterday. He thinks that, you know, he's still, everyone talks about he's got all the tools. You know, he's got the athleticism, the feet, the hands, the instincts, all these things, but he doesn't have the raw strength yet, and his technique could use some improvement as well. He's basically 1 year in now to his career. He's played 16 full games in the National Football League. Do we give him a pass for that, or do we? I mean, it doesn't really matter. This team is what this team is at this point in time. He is the left tackle, and you know, listening to Tony Pacelli this morning on the drill, he said, and he echoed what Jeff said yesterday. The offensive line isn't all to blame for the performance of the seven sacks. Some of that can go around, but clearly, when you are allowing that many, when the running game is not doing what it was doing, it had a good month stretch right there with Denard Robinson. The offensive line has been a weak point relatively compared to the rest of this football team.
Yeah, and to Jokel's thing, and the fundamentals and stuff and technique that you're talking about. I don't think we give him a pass on it, but I think you can put an asterisk on it because, you know, he didn't have his offensive line coach all year. I know Luke Butkus has worked with him there, but he's not George Yarno. So I think you can kind of say, all right, you know what? He hasn't really had the technician coach that he needs. Nobody on the line has. So,
right.
So I think that plays a factor in it. You know, not saying Luke Butkus is doing a bad job, but I'm just,
Doesn't have the experience of George Yarno.
Yeah, exactly. Played in the league, you know, solid, very good coach. But yeah, it's been just been a disappointment across the board there. But you can look at it and you say, okay, well, Joko's young and Bowanko's a rookie and Linder's a rookie.
Yeah. Guys, by the way, have gotten pretty much universal praise for the way
rookies. They really have done a good job there. I think the line has been, it's just been so inconsistent because I thought it was really bad early, got progressively better, and then over the last 2-3 games has really started to struggle again. And with Jokel, what was disappointing to me on Sunday was, okay, he's going up against Jason Pierre-Paul, one of the better, be in the fight though. There were a couple of plays there where he wasn't even in the fight. And,
right.
And that's what I think is probably what's disturbing from that standpoint. You know, you just, and I this is just a personal thing, and I don't know how much of this really matters or means anything, but like Tony Boselli was great for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons he was really good too was he's kind of a jerk when he played a little bit on the field, you know, I didn't want to go any further.
Tony was a guy that you would not want to go up against because not only was he a dominant performer, he was mean.
Yeah, he was
and
a
nasty.
Butthead.
Yeah,
he was a butthead,
I mean,
on the field.
That's what you want,
exactly. And I don't see that from Jokel. And now that doesn't, I mean, he's a really nice kid in the locker room, and that has no bearing on the way they are in the thing, because allegedly Tony's a nice guy, right? I mean,
that's what they say.
That's what we hear. But no, I just think that there's that element of nastiness that's missing from his game, and but that just may be part of his personality, that he's not going to be that nasty guy on the field. And again, I don't know how much that factors into how good of a player you're going to be. I just know that it never hurts.
Right.
To be that guy on
at
the field.
Certain positions,
exactly.
Certainly.
Exactly.
It helps you probably,
right.
Even. You know, but as long as you could play within the system and play, you know, under control and all those
absolutely.
Things, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know what the Jaguars are going to do. I don't know whether George Arnold will be coming back or not. But if he's not coming back for next year, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jags make some sort of a move there to bring in some help for Luke Bowanko.
Luke Butkus. Sure.
Too many Lukes on this team. Three of them. You know, but I would expect them to make some address that coaching position in some way if George isn't coming back.
It's one of the areas today. Our fan feedback spotlight question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks which three positions on the Jags depth chart do fans feel are in the biggest need of an upgrade? Okay, you could even say quarterback if you want to, just based on the way Blake's played. You're not going to get an upgrade in terms of a new player, but maybe an upgrade in terms of the level of play from year one to year two. But I think a lot of people will focus on the offensive line. We got an hour with you here today, and we're very appreciative of that. But in the minutes we have here before our first time out, Blake Bortles, ultimately they said early on they wanted to let him sit as long as possible, maybe the entire year. You can understand, I think, now why some of those reasons,
sure.
You know, the mechanics, which got better, or maybe regressing a little bit late in the season. You know, he's going back to just, it's difficult to work on that aspect of fine-tuning
right.
stuff when you're trying to learn that week's game plan, have your nose in the playbook, execute the plays, all that stuff. All in all, though, considering all the factors, is he where you expected him to be or would have expected him to be if I told you he was going to start, you know, week four of the season, or a little ahead, a little behind, a lot ahead, a lot behind? What do you think?
I honestly think, based on what you said, the fact that they didn't want to play him, because when you look at Blake Bortles, you have to look at it through the filter of, remember, they didn't want to play him this year. I think he's done a solid job. I think he's right where I expected him to be. One of the coaches told us the other day, if you look at Bortles on tape, when he drops back and his footwork is good, his feet are in the right spot, they're pointed the right way for whatever throw he's got to make. When his footwork is good, the ball comes out of his hands fantastic. He's making great throws. When he doesn't do that, and he's thrown off his back foot, or he's you know, throwing with poor footwork, you get throws like the one to Mercedes the other day, the one to Clay Harbor, that they're just not on target.
Right.
And you're right. You can't work on that during the season. You just can't. You have to play. It's game plan, and you have to play each week to win, and you don't have the time to devote to the footwork. So they're going to work on that off in the offseason. I think his decision-making has gotten better as the season has progressed. I don't see him making stupid across-the-body throws anymore, which we saw a lot of earlier in the season. So if you're looking for signs of progress from Bortles, absolutely. You see that he's cut his interception total way down. First game last week without a turnover all season. So I think there's a lot of positives to look there. And if you figure out how to get his footwork fixed in the offseason, then I think he's right on track, and they'll be extremely happy with what they see out of him next year.
All right, Mike DeRocco's here with us from ESPN, covers your Jacksonville Jaguars. We don't have him in here often, so take advantage of the opportunity if you'd like by calling 641-1010 today to get on board Jaguars today. Talk a little Jaguar football. Again, the fan feedback spotlight asking you which three positions on the depth chart do you think are in the biggest need of an upgrade for this football team. Obviously, that upgrading will come at some point in the offseason. 4 weeks to go. We'll get into the Jags matching up with J.J. Watt and company, and look back on the season that has been as well with Mike DeRocco from ESPN. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're along with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Mike DeRocco, Lauren Brooks here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, 38 special. If I'd been the one. Is that anything to do with D-Rock?
I thought you might guess that first, but it does not. I'm sorry, D-Rock.
Nothing that about that necessarily said D-Rock to me, but
if he'd been the one.
I can't think along with you.
Thank God.
Yes. 38 special.
If only he was your partner in life.
Okay. That took it, I guess, to its logical conclusion there.
And that ends the theme.
And scene.
On 1010XL and for the rest
scene.
Of the year.
We okay. are done. All right. D-Rock, couple things. One, Scobie. We got to clean the palate here. Scobie is your AFC offense, or AFC special teams player of the week. Would have been quite a story if he was your offensive player of the week for his game winner, I guess, primarily. In the Jags' victory over the New York Giants, couple of field goals.
I'm just imagining the scenario where Josh Scobie was offensive player of the week.
Wouldn't it be phenomenal?
Due to injury, Josh Scobie forced to play quarterback.
Emergency wildcat quarterback.
Against the Colts last 2 weeks ago. He was the only. This
is true.
You know,
but those are still special teams points. I don't know, but Scobie wins it. What is that? His sixth time? I think the Jags said eighth time. That he has won it?
That he has won it.
That's pretty good.
That is really good.
I mean, I guess, you know, game-winning field goal, last-second field goal, puts you right up there in a week where I guess there weren't any particularly memorable kick returns, punt returns for touchdowns, anything like that.
No.
It's more of a big offensive week than anything. Somebody asked me to remind you, you can vote for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week, which Aaron Colvin is up for. You can go to NFL.com. It's on the front page. Good luck with that one, Aaron. I mean, I voted for him, but Trey Mason went crazy on the ground for the Rams in their 52-0 win. Dante Moncrief had three catches for like 130 yards and two touchdowns this week.
That's a good game.
That's pretty productive. Devontae Adams, I want to say, had like a buck 30 as well, something like that for Green Bay. Teddy Bridgewater, I don't know what he did this week, but he's one of the nominees as well. And Blake Bortles also nominated for the GMC Never Say Never Moment of the Week. What would the moment have been for him? Is it just the fact that he brought him back in a comeback?
Probably that drive, yeah.
It's not like one literal moment, right? Not like one play kind of thing.
I mean, you could point to maybe that big run.
No, but down two with a couple minutes left, driving down the field less than a couple minutes left, put him in field goal position, win the game.
Overcomes two penalties.
Overcomes two penalties, makes a great run, big aggressive come try to tackle me run on that 20-yarder. You don't want to see that all the time, but this team needed it, Mike. And I've been saying this since the game ended on Sunday. The fashion this game was won in was probably the best thing that could have happened for this football team. Obviously, to win, they needed any kind of win.
Right.
And you would have taken, you know, 14-point coast to victory kind of situation. But the defense, you had to wonder at what point they're going to start internally, at least, saying, man, one of these guys going to carry their weight around here,
yeah,
right?
For the love of seriously, help us out.
They, in the last two games, with the 8 fumbles forced, 9 sacks, 6 fumble recoveries, have done a tremendous job, and now adding a couple of touchdowns on top
of it. Which really was the only other thing they could do.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, now we got you 2 touchdowns. Okay, now help us out, please.
You know, Tony Boselli said in the pregame, and he said, you know, you've got to have that mentality if you're on that defensive side of the football, that it doesn't matter if we're only giving up 3. We have to give up 0 then.
Right.
And you can't think about what's going on that – you know, if you have to go to overtime scoreless and you have to block something and return it for a score, whatever it takes, that's what you're going to have to do. They had played that way, and they had brought this team back and had the lead. Giants get it back, and at that point, the offense finally, you know, comes through at a critical moment
right.
for this team, for this football season, and special teams as well, as much trouble as they've had with the blocked kicks this year. To have all, certainly the defense carried a disproportionate amount of the weight, but they couldn't have done it without the offense
right.
this time, you know?
It was I the only one in that press box or in the stadium that thought, based on all the trouble this team's had on special teams and based on the luck of this franchise right now, that thing was going to get blocked, that Scobie's kick was going to get blocked? Was I the only one thinking that?
No. No, you're not. Or that, how about the ensuing kickoff would, I don't know,
out of bounds?
Yes.
Or the Giants would take it back for a touchdown.
We've seen that
yeah.
this year as yeah. well. So, no, I mean, and that's when you're following a 1-10 team, I think that's natural to kind of expect the worst in that scenario.
But you're right. The way they won this game is just as important or more important than the fact that they won it. And the fact that, you know, it's more important that you saw that out of Bortles. The one thing, there's Ryan Robinson.
There he is.
The one thing that I liked was, sometimes quarterbacks can play badly for 3 quarters and come back and then pull the game out. And those are that's what you want out of your quarterback. If he's having an off day, but as long as he comes through when he's needed, when he's clutch when you need him to be, that's a great trait to have in a quarterback. And I think Bortles may have a little bit of that. Now, he didn't play terrible all
right, and
the
I would
game.
Agree with you. He didn't put up big numbers, but at the same time, he's under heavy duress.
Right.
He's getting sacked 7 times in the football game. He wasn't pinpoint, as you pointed out on a couple of occasions.
Right.
When the footwork was bad, he missed particularly the one to Clay Harbor, as he described it yesterday, Tony. You can't one-hop that ball.
No.
And it's you go back and watch the play, and he's wide open coming off the line, and Blake sees him immediately, and it's like, just set your feet and get it out there,
right.
bud.
Right.
It's not that difficult.
That's the example of, you know, he didn't set his feet, and
right.
it wasn't a fundamental throw, and that's why he missed it. But you're right, he wasn't great, but when they needed him to be. And I think that opened up a lot of eyes on the offense and the defense about him. Because you can say, hey, Blake's our guy. We believe in Blake.
Right.
You know,
we love his demeanor.
He's Mr.
Cool.
Yeah,
he's our
leader. But so far you haven't seen
go
anything.
Go win us a game.
Yeah, you haven't seen anything
right.
that you want to see out of him from that standpoint. And he did, and that's got to make everybody feel pretty good.
Somebody, it might have been on primetime yesterday, said the only thing they were disappointed, they wished they had been down by 4 or 5.
So he'd have to score.
Right, compel him to baby steps, right? You know what?
Sure, and look, you're talking about a team that a week before we're in here doing the post game, and Cecil Shorts is talking to Jeff Logman in the locker room after that game, and he gets asked a pretty simple question. What do you have to do to get this offense to where it needs to be? And there was a sigh, and then a really long pause. Like, Cecil didn't want, it was just like, I need to think about what I'm about to say.
Right.
And then it was just, I don't know. You know, and I think that's where a lot of the guys on the offensive side of the ball felt is, there are these opportunities in games, and because of either the pressure that is coming up front or Blake not getting his feet set and throwing the ball the right way, that they've been missing opportunities to put up plays and points in these games. And on Sunday, it was the same kind of thing. There were opportunities for plays to be had.
Right.
And Blake just wasn't making them for whatever reason. They weren't getting
right.
made. And finally, when they had the opportunity because of how well the defense played, and they put the ball in his hands, it went bam, 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 bam. They got the field goal and got the win. And I think everybody has to feel really good about that in that locker room because, like you said, they hadn't seen it.
Right.
They knew the chances were there, but they hadn't seen it put together for that guy yet, and he finally did.
Well, to be honest with you, we would have seen it against Tennessee had Cecil not fumbled inside the red zone. you know, then that changes the whole complexion.
Even if Scobie just makes that kick.
Right, it's a whole different complexion in that game because then, you know, they're driving later. But I thought he was great in the fourth quarter of that game. You know, and like you said, if he makes a kick, then boom, you see it a couple of weeks ago. Does that change the way things go against the Colts last week? I don't know. But, you know, now they've seen it from him, and now there's a lot more confidence in him than there. I mean, it's hard. We don't expect them to say, you know what, I don't know about this kid. We don't know. I mean, you expect them to stand behind him and support
right,
him
but
no matter
but the
what.
Level that they have has been pretty telling, I think. You know what I mean?
I
mean,
agree.
Like, there's unanimity about there's little question whatsoever that this guy has some special attributes to him. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to turn into a top five quarterback.
Right.
But that he has the makeup, the personality that you need in a quarterback, the ability to bring everybody together, the ability to downplay his own success, the command of the huddle, all these things. And he's got the physical gifts to go along with it. He's just got to hone them.
Yeah, look. These guys love Bortles.
These young kids.
Yeah, he's here like 2 weeks, and they'll follow him anywhere. Now, these guys wouldn't have followed Gabbert into a strip club. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he has won this team over relatively quickly, and they will follow him anywhere. But it's still nice to know that he's going to lead us to a win every once in a while.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The other couple things about what you said, Tony, with the Cecil Shorts moment, that quote was so – it was so exasperating. He was just, you know, at his wit's end. But even in that moment, he had the clarity of, I'm not going to throw this thing, you know, into the gutter. I'm not going to, you know, and everybody has been pretty much on board with the program. And that's, I think, a testament to the coaching staff, to Gus Bradley in particular, that second consecutive year, and this is not enough to give you long-term job security, but the second consecutive year, nothing's fallen apart. In terms of bickering, finger pointing, any of that stuff, with a horrendous start last year and an equally or worse start in some ways this year.
Yeah, that he hasn't lost the locker room to me is amazing. And maybe that's because I've been covering college for so long that, you know, you lose a college locker room like that. I mean, obviously that can change the way a whole season goes. But the fact that, you know, that's the one thing that surprised me about my first year covering the team last year was how great everybody was in the locker room and how positive an atmosphere it was in the locker room 0-8 after all of those wins or losses by double digits. And it's the same thing this year. And that's a testament to Gus and the culture that he's talked about and getting that. Now, you've got to start following up with that up with wins, because if you don't start following that up with wins, then it starts to become a little
tedious. You can only feel good and rah-rah and pep rally at
But the fact
so
that
long.
The team has stayed together like that is, to me, one of the amazing things about these last two seasons.
If you didn't hear the thing we're referring to, the Cecil's reaction, this is what when Jeff Loggeman talked to him last week in the postgame.
What is it going to take that next step to start to have progress offensively?
You know, I don't want to sound repetitive. I need to. I'm not sure. We need to figure out a way to get points and get better as offense, man.
I mean, you can just imagine there are a lot of things he might have said at that moment, you know, and probably a lot of them true, but they would have been probably speaking out of emotion. And, you know, that to me was impressive that he was able to. All right, I you know, because I can't do that very often with myself,
right.
You know. The other thing is, this is an offense at that point in time that Gus Bradley, with 17 minutes left in the game, felt it was necessary to go for two to make it a three-point ball game.
Right.
With 17, this wasn't 7 minutes left in the 17 minutes,
right.
2 minutes left in the third quarter, which is completely unorthodox by NFL standards that you would do something like that. Because, look, we get it, the reality, he's watching the same thing we're watching.
Right.
They're not creating many offensive opportunities for themselves. You can't count on that second defensive touchdown at that point in time. So
you can't count on any touchdown at that point.
You can't count
on
right. You've already surpassed probably your. I don't know if they're at their season average. What are they averaging in points right now?
I don't know. Let me look.
They were at like 15, somewhere around 15, going into the.
They were at 16 at that point in time. They tried to make it 21-18.
Right. Yeah. We got. That's all we got. 16.
You know what?
And
maybe maybe somehow we force another fumble. We get a field goal on one of those 2 yard drives.
But, you know, Gus on Monday, one of the funniest things I've ever seen, by the way, or I've seen in a long time, was after Monday's press conference, Vito walks up to Gus afterwards at the table, and he sticks the finger out and he's wagging and he's giving him the lecture about the 2-point conversion, why you never go for two then, and all that other stuff is funny. And Gus is like, it's on the sheet, and here, look, here's the sheet. And well, and then they've got their analytics sheet and all that other stuff. It was right on there. Gus is like, it wasn't a gut thing. I mean, this is based on what we see on the sheet, what the analytics have told us and all that other stuff. And Vito was just going, wah, 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 wah. John Fox lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots and bah, going for two. And it was funny. And then the best part, even funnier than that, was after that conversation ended about 9 hours later, we're walking down the hallway to go get a drink, and we run into Tony Khan. And Vito starts again, all over again on the 2-point conversion. It was awesome. So, but yeah, I mean,
I get the sheet, yeah, yeah. But the, you don't go to the sheet to me with 2 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah, I would have kicked the extra point.
Me too.
You know, I mean, I think most people would have.
And you know what?
Point.
It's okay. You know what? Because all those kind of things that happen, they happen all around the National Football League on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And half the teams win, and for the most part, unless that becomes an ongoing pattern, they get forgotten about, and that's okay. You wash away the mistakes when they come in a win. It's not a big deal, you know, and that's the NFL. They don't all end up pretty. They don't all end up 28-7
No.
Where you dominate from start to finish.
Look, if the fourth down attempt that the Patriots made against the Colts in whatever year it was had worked and they went on to win the game, no one would have had a problem with it.
Now, I didn't have a problem with that one at that time anyway.
No,
you know,
well,
I know the one you're talking
about.
Yeah,
my problem was if it's fourth and two and you're Kevin Falk, what the hell are you doing running a 1.5-yard pattern? Get beyond the first down marker. That's my problem with the play. But the call was fine. You know,
was
you
it Falk or was it Welker?
No, it was Falk.
It was Falk.
Was it Falk?
On that Sunday night game? Yeah, that was who's Falk.
The Patriots Colts, the one we're talking about?
Yeah.
Was it Falk? Okay.
Yeah, who's a huge, I mean, big veteran, smart guy. I mean, the guy, that's the one guy you're going to go to, the most reliable guy, and you run it, you know, run the pattern one step beyond the first down marker.
You know, when Kevin Falk left school, he was the second leading rusher in SEC history.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Kevin, I mean, Kevin, he's a good player, but my goodness,
I wonder where he ranks now. Probably not even in the top 10.
I bet he is still in the top 10. We'll have to dig that one up. Let's go to the phone. 641-1010. Let's welcome Will. Oh, I'm sorry. I tell you what. We're going to go to a break is what we're going to do. 641-1010. We'll open the phone lines up to you coming up on the other side if you'd like to get on board. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Mike DiRocco, Fat Tony here with you. I have a feeling we'll be looking at the top 10 rushers in SEC history coming up here in a moment. Lauren Brooks along as well. Jaguars Today continues on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, by the way, I should have mentioned I had the theme figured out like 2 minutes after he played the last.
I had a feeling you would.
Yeah. I mean, it's Scobie, special player of the week, 38 special. And I did not need to know this was Josh Turner just to be your man. See,
since
that
we were on
again on another level.
Correct.
Here.
Since we were on that, I had to keep going.
Yes.
I'm never coming back.
Never, ever, ever.
I'm sorry, Michael. I've chased you away.
If I'd been the one just to be your man. Wow. If you can pull off the triple, that's going to be impressive. If
thank you. Can,
Is this the quickest anyone's ever gotten your theme there?
No.
Yeah. We've gotten it. They've gotten it on the first song before.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that witty.
I've gotten weeks, though, without getting it, so... you know, I'm not that proud of myself. Yeah,
I was impressed. If you just want to, you know, crap all over yourself, that's fine. But
what happens? But I've been working with Lauren now for how many months has it been, Lauren?
We started the show in April.
So we'll call it a bunch of months.
Yeah, almost 8 months.
And you know, Lauren pretty much. She's like me in some ways. I get distracted very easily, right? Someone walks by, and I'll go, oh, look at that. You know,
shiny
and,
stuff.
Yeah, it's a brand new subject to talk about. And Lauren was like, you know, she'll hear something, and that instantly becomes a music theme within 30 seconds.
Yes.
That's kind of the way she goes. So I should have known better.
Because they're always way better than the ones I'd originally thought of. To be honest.
Do you really stay up nights plotting these? Or
I do. I usually wake up around 3 a.m. And just lie there thinking of my music theme for the next day.
Once you get it, then you head right into work, start pulling songs and all that stuff. Just
absolutely.
The exact way we would expect that to go. All right. 641-1010 if you want to get on board Jaguars Today. Mike DiRocco in today. Mark Long on assignment chasing Jim McElwain. Is that him who we're talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Jim McElwain.
It's basically, I guess they're... Most of the guys that are in Florida covering the thing, they're not obviously in Colorado, so they're just sitting there waiting to see anything on Twitter about Foley. Picture Foley walking out of the house or the plane or something like that.
Has Flight Tracker been involved in this at all?
Yes.
Because that's,
yes.
That's always a thing,
it
right?
Was. Yes, it was.
That's become quite the way to follow what's happening.
The next step is someone stowing away on those planes. That's going to be the next step in this in the legal,
wow.
The legal stalking of ADs and coaches.
I could see Mark Long doing some, you know, taking part in some kind of risky behavior like that. He seems like the kind of guy that might throw caution to the wind. Anything for the story, Mike.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. Just, you know, make sure you hold on. You don't want to fall out of the wheel well somewhere.
I guess.
Over,
I guess.
Know, or wherever the heck they would fly over.
It's gonna happen whether you're in the wheel well or not. So don't kill yourself for the story is my motto. Mike, coming up, we got a month to go in the season. We've only got about 15 minutes here with you. So let's talk about the next 4 weeks a little bit, these next four games. How important is it? On many levels, to get some wins here, how many of these games do you think, you know, is there a number in your mind you'd like to see them win two out of the final four? Is that what's going to appease not only the fan base to some degree, but internally to have them, you know, reinforce the belief that they're on the right path? What are you expecting out of this last month?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think from a number of win standpoint, I think if you're the Jags, you'd probably want to win both home games. You want to beat the Texans this week, which would be tough. But you should be able to beat the Titans at home in the last home game. That'd give you, what, four wins? All four have been at home. That makes your home make the fans feel pretty good about going into next year. I mean, obviously, you want to see some improvement, continued improvement out of a lot of guys, out of Bortles. It would be great to see Marquise Lee continue to progress
right.
And become a big part of the offense, a bigger part of the offense as the season goes on. You know, and some of the stuff we talked about earlier, obviously, offensive line, you want to see some progress there with some of those guys. Maybe, you know, you'd like to see Luke Jokel this week when he's lined up against J.J. Watt be competitive in those battles and not give up, you know, four sacks to Watt. You know,
Watt's going to be cherry picking, by the way.
Right.
We know he'll
move
all over the place. But clearly he'll get his turn against J.J.
Yeah,
Watt.
They'll all face him, and I'm writing that today. They'll all get a shot at him at one point or another.
Which, by the way, here's a story. Fill in the blank. So-and-so blank cannot block J.J. Watt, okay? Put Luke's name in there.
Anybody.
If he does, God bless him, because the guy's having one of the best defensive seasons ever.
Right. And if it's me, and I see that Josh Wells is starting at right tackle, I'm setting up a tent on the left side of the defensive formation. I'm going after the rookie.
Do you think
all
it'll
time.
Be Wells or Sam Young?
I would guess, my guess would probably be Sam Young. I think you would probably go with the veteran. That's just my opinion.
And the idea that maybe Sam Young's just a right tackle, right?
Right.
That leaves you with Wells as kind of your flexible guy right. If something were to happen on either
bigger,
side of the line.
Bigger, stronger. I think probably Wells is a little bit of a better athlete, but you know, this is J.J. Watt we're talking about. So, you know, you probably want
sure.
A stronger guy, so a veteran guy who understands some tricks here and there. That's what my guess is who it would be.
Do you think that these guys like that, like Logman really likes Sam Young and Josh Wells? Just you can hear the way he talks about them and the way he sees potential in them. You see that as well? I mean, we talk about upgrading different positions. Certainly that could come from internally as well. How do you think they're going to play that out? Are they going to try to bring Pastor back at a reasonable price? He's a restricted free agent. So, you know, you basically can exclusively negotiate with him. Do you bring him back, throw him and Young and Wells and all these guys just into the mix and say, have at it, and let's see what emerges?
Yeah, and I think you also bring in some other guys, too. Let's be honest, none of those, with the exception of probably center, left guard, and right guard, you know, we mentioned earlier, they're not going to do anything with Luke Jokel.
Right.
You know, they're not going to get rid of him. But you probably feel good about center and right guard. You probably want to see Beatles play a lot better next year.
A lot better,
yeah,
right.
But, you know, you probably want to see some more competition at right tackle. Look at what the Cowboys did. They built that offensive line, and that's why they're having success.
But they built it with first-round picks.
They did build it with first-round picks. You're correct.
And it's at least three out of the five were this team, I don't think, can afford to spend that kind of draft capital on that unit.
No, but I think they bring someone else in, you bring Pastor back, and you let him fight it out. You could do a lot worse, I think, than having Austin Pastor as your right tackle. But, you know, let's see how it works in the offseason. Maybe Wells improves significantly. You know, get him in the offseason program, get him a year, bigger, stronger, see what happens there. But, yeah, I think they'll work. That's what they'll probably do.
Jokel needs to get bigger, stronger,
too. Absolutely. And he needs to get more fundamentally sound, like we talked about earlier as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, bigger for sure.
The fan feedback spotlight, asking people about what specific positions they'd like to see upgraded. All right, we talked a lot about the offensive line. What else stands out to you across this team, offense, defense, special teams? What do they? Where do they need serious improvement, like going off the roster kind of improvement to bring somebody in to at least compete, if not outright take that spot?
Okay. Well, I do think they need to upgrade at free safety. Whether that means signing someone in free agency or drafting someone pretty high to compete with Josh Evans or whoever else they're going to throw back there. I do think they still need to continue to upgrade at linebacker, speed at linebacker. You know, Paz will be back next year. I think there's always going to be a spot for him here.
What about Geno Hayes? I know this, he was on a two-year deal.
Right.
So he's played since moving to the auto. I think he's played a little bit better.
Yeah. Played
right?
pretty well.
Any chance he's back, or is this going to be Paz Lesny, Telvin Smith, new starter, and JT Thomas will be kind of your fourth linebacker across the board? Does JT have a chance to start at that spot, or what?
Yeah, I think you can probably start JT out there if you need to, and go with Telvin and Paz and JT, and then in your nickel, it's JT and Paz or whatever. I probably would be a little bit surprised if Geno is back. He's played pretty well. The one thing that this linebacker group has done better this year, I think, that they need to do, they need to make big plays. That's where you make your defenses, the good defenses make plays. And they just really haven't gotten a lot of big plays out of the linebacker group as a general rule. Telvin has had some games where he's made some big plays for sure. But Geno made a big play last week when he knocked the ball away from Eli. But they need more of that. And I think that's where the biggest upgrade on defense has to come in, as a general rule, is they need more plays, more speed out of linebacker.
Well, and that shows up in that they're making plays in the sack game, right, where they're forcing
right.
fumbles, they're knocking the ball out, but they're not making interceptions. They're not making plays on the ball in the air like
right.
that. I think Telvin Smith will be a guy that does make those plays.
I agree.
You know, and I think that improvement can come internally off
right.
this roster. And, you know, we talk about a little bit about the D-line. You can't really single out one spot to me, but Mark Long, who's in with us typically on Wednesdays, talked about going back to what Dave Caldwell said initially, kind of his philosophy was, if you're going to be picking near the top of the draft for consecutive years, for 3 years, right off the bat, as you rebuild, the areas you want to focus on are quarterback, left tackle, and pass rush.
Right.
Okay? Well, two of those three have already been addressed. You can debate, you know, to what degree they've been addressed, how successful those picks are, but a lot of people think that if this team ends up with a top five pick, most likely place they go is a defensive end. It kind of fits the value of the top five range.
Right.
And sort of fits a need with what you want. It's tough to say this team needs pass rush when they're getting as many sacks, but Clemens is a little long in the tooth.
33, 32.
They don't have that one guy.
No.
That you keeps defensive coordinators up right. at night.
And what's been good about the pass rush here is it has been so spread out. I mean, there's been production from a lot of guys. I mean, Sendarek Marks, your tackle, is tied for a team lead with Chris Clemens. So that shows you where the production's come from, too. But you're right. They need one guy, the one elite guy that opposing offenses have to go, okay, we've got to account for, you know, Randy Gregory, or we've got to account for J.J. Watt. I mean, you just can't say, you know, I don't see a lot of teams, you know, devoting two players some help to stop Chris Clemens or to stop Andre Branch. You know, so I think they do need that elite guy. Now, maybe, you know, depending on what they can do in free agency, although I wouldn't expect them to grab a pass rusher in free agency, but, you know, things may change based on what they see at the end of the year. There's still a month left to go to figure out, you know, injuries can occur, and you just see what happens. But I think that would probably be one of their top two or three priorities. You're right.
You don't typically find the type of pass rusher we're talking about in
right.
free agency.
Right.
The kind you get is Chris Clemens. That
right.
for
exactly.
whatever reason, he's just a little bit older. You know, he's had an injury in, you know, a couple of years removed. They're guys with flaws for whatever reason.
Right.
You know, they're not seen as the super elite guys. By the way, I do this all the time. We talk about Kevin Falk before the break. Would we say third all time in the SEC?
SEC, yeah.
Herschel,
yeah.
McFadden, Kevin Falk.
Yep, and then Bo Jackson, Eric Rett, Dalton Hilliard, Charles Alexander, Anthony Dixon, and Emmett Smith, and Sonny Collins from Kentucky.
Anthony Dixon is in the top 10 all
time,
too.
Is that amazing? It's weird. You just don't, like, I would have thought for sure that Trent Richardson would have been in there, But you just don't. I mean, he's.
But he was behind Ingram, right?
Exactly, right?
So
yeah.
I mean, all those guys.
Ingram's 21st. You know, and you think, well, Ingram, you know, but these guys just don't stay as long as they used to before. And it's a different game now than it was, you know, in the 70s and 80s for sure.
Yeah, so. But I still find that amazing. Kevin Faulks, top three all time, SEC rusher. Hell of a player. And, man, if he was smart, that guy is on easy street because he played a long time in the National Football League,
like,
man.
12, 15 years, I think.
So. All right, a couple minutes left here, D-Rock. What do you expect this week? Head-to-head, anything favor the Jags in these matchups? Obviously, J.J. Watt's a handful to deal with. But Houston traditionally is a team that no matter what the records of these two franchises are. One can be up, one can be down, and vice versa. They always seem to play each other pretty close.
Yeah, I know that the Jags have had some issues with Ryan Fitzpatrick before. You know, he almost won that game in Tennessee last year when he came in after Jake Locker. Now, I don't expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to come out there and throw for six touchdowns like he did last week. Yeah, but, you know, I think they'll get after him a little bit, and I think that they're going to, you know, have a little bit more success against him than they have in the past. But I mean, I like the fact that the Jags are playing so well up front defensively that I think this is going to be sort of a game where the Texans are going to have to struggle to really move the ball and score. You know, provided that the secondary, there's no bust in the secondary or anything like that. And then, you know, you want to see them get the run game going, the Jags, and at least be able to be somewhat productive there and get Denard going again. I think they're a better team when Denard's able to get some yards on the ground, obviously. You know, but it to me, I just don't know if they're going to be able to handle Watt. And the other thing is, too, we didn't even talk about it. You got to watch out for Watt on defense.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. December 3rd, 1950. The Los Angeles Rams featured wide receiver Tom Fears on his 27th birthday by throwing him the ball 18 times. At least 18 he caught. He may have thrown him, probably did throw him more than that. 18 receptions, which broke the league mark, which was 14 at the time. Had 189 yards, couple of touchdowns. Rams scored 51 points, much like this week where they scored 52. Tony, I was surprised that there have only been 25 games of 15 or more catches, especially in the pass-happy ways of the NFL. You mentioned some, we were talking off the air, you mentioned some of the guys you thought were on this list. Brandon Marshall, who's on here twice, 21 catches for the Broncos against the Colts on December 13th, 2009.
Yeah.
That's the all-time record. Beat Terrell Owens, who had 20. Fierce held that record for 50 years. Pretty good.
How about that?
You know, all through all that passing era, Jason Witten's on here a couple of times, a couple of 15, 115, 118. He's also got a 14-catch game. Of course, Jimmy Smith had the 15 catches against the Ravens for 291 yards, three touchdowns, which still stands in my oldest dynasty league as the best single-game output for a wide receiver, 62 beautiful PPR points that day, thermonuclear. And Keenan had 16 catches versus the St. Louis Rams in 96, which is good for tied for seventh all-time. Of course, Justin Blackmon, in his brief time on the field here in Jacksonville, had a 14-catch game against the Broncos back in 2013, October of last year. 14 catches puts you in the top 50 of all time for a single game. So pretty good stuff right there. Active guys who've had 15 or more. Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, Darren Sproles. Welker's done it twice. Reggie Wayne did it once as well. Calvin Johnson's best was 14 versus the Cowboys last year. Might have been when he went for, what did he go for last year? Like 290, 306, something.
Something stupid.
Something crazy. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. If you need fencing for your home, for your place of business, they can custom modify a fence and build it to your specifications. You'll get a professional free estimate at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or simply visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Yeah, tried 14 for 329, but only one touchdown in that game for Calvin Johnson.
Oh, only one.
He only scored the once. The Buffalo Bills, have ended their once-a-year jaunt north of the border to play a game a year in Toronto officially. In 2008 from 2013, the Bills played six regular season and two preseason games in Canada. The team had already decided not to play a game up there this year, so most believe the agreement was probably coming to an end. Under pressure from fans in Buffalo that were upset with losing a game a year at Ralph Wilson Stadium, they did again this year a couple weeks ago, but that, of course, because of a massive snowstorm that forced the Bills to play the Jets in Detroit. The Houston Texans are coming to Jacksonville on Sunday. This would be the first opportunity to see two of the top three picks in this year's draft on the field together, maybe. Jadeveon Clowney, the number one overall pick, is still dealing with a bad knee that he injured in week one, had surgery on to repair a torn meniscus. Clowney missed 6 weeks, has been in and out of the lineup since, complaining that the knee doesn't feel right after games, also having problems with swelling in that knee following games. He's going to see Dr. James Andrews today to get a second opinion on that gimpy knee. So maybe, maybe not.
Dr. Andrews is not the guy you want your name associated with.
No.
I mean, he's very good at what he does. If you've had the injury, you want your name associated with him, but you don't want to get to the point where you've got to go see him. I've got a lot in common, apparently, with Jadeveon Clowney. We both have a torn meniscus, and it has slowed me as well, Tony. I will not be suiting up this week for anyone in the National Football League, but seriously, could you imagine right now? I mean, had things played out differently, what if the Texans had taken Blake Bortles, right? He'd be playing for them
sure
now, because they'd already made the switch away from Fitzpatrick to try to get Ryan Mallett going. And Jadeveon Clowney, you don't know, because maybe he doesn't suffer the same injury here, but imagine if he did and you were in the same circumstance right now, which I guess makes it even more impressive that Houston's been able to, you know, kind of turn their fortunes around from last year's 2-14. Bigger impact, I think, is getting Fitzpatrick. When he's been good, he's been okay, you know? I mean, and that's the biggest thing. They upgraded the quarterback position, and more than anything, even though he got benched, overall, the quarterback play for Houston has been so much better this year than it was last year.
No, it's been better. We were talking about it a moment ago. Look, that's a team that by the time the Jags started seeing them on the schedule last year, they had quit. I mean, it was done in Houston by the time the Jags got a chance to play them. And you're talking about J.J. Watt's having a year for the ages at defensive end. He's been maybe one of the best handful of players in the league since he got into it, but he's having an unbelievable season. And it is funny. I know we have Jeff Logman in here on Tuesdays, and he's talking about watching tape of Houston, and every time he does, he has to watch it twice because he just finds himself staring at J.J. Watt and what he's doing. It is uncanny what he does on a play-by-play basis. I mean, it really is incredible, his ability to dominate the line of scrimmage. But outside of that, we talked a lot in this past offseason about the decision of this team to go as young as they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and that they'd be relying on, we've seen it, Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee and all these different guys, these young guys on offense. Well, what you're seeing in Houston, too, is a guy that they drafted in the first round coming into his second year in the league, coming on, starting to figure out how to play the position of wide receiver. So it's not just Andre Johnson in that passing right. game anymore. There are options now for Houston, and I think DeAndre Hopkins has really developed over the course of this season, and it's helping this team. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's already crossed the 1,000-yard mark on the year. He had a huge game last week, obviously. That can only help you. And with Arian Foster getting back in the fold, looks like he's healthy again finally for that team. Look, they're dangerous. And that's not something they were when they came to Jacksonville last year. This year, that's a dangerous football team.
Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is now the guy in that passing game, period. And Andre Johnson's a nice complimentary piece that they have. You see how crazy they went when he scored a touchdown last week? Because he never gets to the end zone. Yeah. I mean, he's never been a big touchdown scorer, which is kind of weird considering how big of a guy he is. You know, a physical target, you would think down in the red zone they would have had plenty of opportunities to get him double-digit seasons. I would guess, Tony, without looking at the number, he's maybe had one double-digit touchdown season in his career.
I'm looking at it now. Never had one.
Never had a double-digit touchdown season. And, nope. You know, he's a great player, but you talk about today's passing game. And Matt Schaub, for a stretch, was a pretty good quarterback in Houston. Certainly he's gone the complete opposite. I mean, he got what, just a few minutes of playing time this week and threw a pick six for the Oakland Raiders. Yeah. I mean, he just, it doesn't take long for him to capitalize on his opportunity.
Now, in contrast, while a guy like Andre Johnson was in his prime, you look at Arian Foster. So 2010 to 2012, Foster scored 16, 10, 15 rushing touchdowns. He added a couple touchdowns a year receiving in those years as well.
That so, takes away a lot of opportunities.
Right. So when they got down into that part of the field, it was Foster time.
Pretty automatic, yeah. too, at that point. So yeah. And he is, this year, when he's been healthy, Foster, he's played very well.
He's having maybe the best year of his career statistically.
On a per-game average.
Yeah.
Because he's missed time with the groin injury. And,
but he's 5 yards a carry right now. He's caught 31 passes for 4 touchdowns on the season. That's his best receiving year to this point as far as getting into the end zone. And he's at 900 yards for the season, and he's got 7 rushing touchdowns. So if he plays the last 4 games, you would expect him to probably wind up around 1,200 yards with 11 or 12 touchdowns would be around where he'd be. And at 5 yards a carry, I mean, that's a really good season for a guy that's going to miss 3 or 4 games when everything's said and done.
I'll be surprised if he goes for 5 yards a carry this week. I really will. You know, I mean, the Jags, the pass rush has gotten the most notice, and Rashad Jennings ran hard for him last week for the New York Giants, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that Foster has some success, but I will be surprised if he runs at that kind of clip that he's been averaging so far this year. All right, if you want to get in, 641-1010, there's your Honda Drive around the NFL. We've got our injury report coming up shortly from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute with Dr. Lucy stopping by. The fan feedback spotlight today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, which asks you which positions, which 3 positions on the Jaguars depth chart, and that includes special teams, offense, defense, special teams, are in the biggest need of an upgrade from where things stand now in order to get this team to a consistently competitive level. Those upgrades obviously are coming sometime after the month of December, could come internally, could come from off the roster, free agency, the draft, what have you. So feel free to weigh in on that as well. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I hope you're not saying this plays on every level. What is it, Hot Legs by Rod Stewart? Josh Scobie, Special Teams Player of the Week in the AFC, Tony. That's where your Hot Leg came in.
Uh-huh.
Right there. Monday guest of Jaguars Today. Sat in that very chair that you're sitting in right now with his scalding legs. And
scalding legs.
What? It's scalding legs. It's been just a...
Hopefully he's well taken care of legs.
Hasn't been the best year for the kicking game here.
No.
Certainly.
But it came through when it needed to on Sunday.
It did. It did. 3 blocks plus the 4th deflection. Plus, and I forgot until D-Rock was here when we were talking about it, you know, the kick out of bounds against Cincinnati. Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
Just awful at that point in the game where you had all the momentum against a really good team, as it is turning out right now with the Cincinnati Bengals. What, 8-3-1,
yep.
I think?
Game and a half up.
Speaking of the one, I don't know who you tied in the 1010XL Listener League, Fantasy Football League.
Right.
But it was enough to put you in the playoffs. That tie gave you that half-game advantage over Josh Kearney. You and I go head-to-head this week.
Oh.
We'll see how that works out.
Probably not going to work out well.
It depends on your perspective. I guess you're talking about from your perspective. The outcome will determine whether or not this gets mentioned again, at least by me. We'll see how that whole thing goes coming down the line. I saw this headline on Pro Football Talk. It says, Chip Kelly, Florida hasn't called. If they do, I'll hang up. At this point, I think it's pretty clear where Florida's going for their next head coach, but Chip Kelly was asked about it today. Said, Florida hasn't contacted me. If they did, I wouldn't listen. It's false. I think false things are silly. All right. Good for you. Good for you, Chip. My whole mantra is to be where your feet are. I'm right here, and I'm not concerned about anything else. I'm happy being here now. It's difficult, Tony. Extremely difficult to pull a successful NFL coach to the college ranks in the midst of a season, for goodness sakes. I mean, Petrino, when he left Atlanta, was not very successful at the time. The players hated him.
They did.
And they hated him even more because he basically snuck out without talking to anybody, at least man to man. You know, Chip Kelly's 9-3. They play the Seattle Seahawks this week.
Yeah.
If they win that game, they've got the inside track, maybe the home field advantage throughout in the playoffs to get to the Super Bowl. So, you know, what more can you want? You're as close to the pinnacle of the profession as you can get right now, being that it's still the regular season. You're 9-3. You're playing great football. You just thrash your division rival on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
Unless you're just one of these guys that absolutely would prefer to coach in college. But this guy's having tremendous success, and I think he likes the challenge of taking some different type concepts and bringing them to the National Football League.
No, I agree. And look, you don't go from Philadelphia to Florida and consider that a step up. And I know a lot of Gator fans may not like to hear that, but look, it's the NFL. It's the big time. And not only is he in the NFL, but he's been successful in his year and a half, basically, in the NFL to this point.
Let me ask you, let me interject on this, though. Let's say Jim Harbaugh, right, wanted to go to Michigan. Is that a step down? I don't think that's a step down. I don't think Florida's a step down necessarily. It's just a different realm. I agree with you that the NFL is the highest level of the profession, but I don't think there's anything wrong, like with Nick Saban going from Miami to Alabama. Is that a step down?
Not necessarily. And I think that there are different levels of success that those guys have that make it seem like it is or isn't. I'm not sure. Look, Chip Kelly doesn't strike me as the type of guy, if he went to Florida, that he's going to be there for 20 years anyway.
But if he went there for 6 years and he won a national championship and a couple more SECs.
But he'd be trying to get somewhere back in the NFL. I mean, he would be using that to get back in the NFL, which is why it wouldn't make any sense to me. Like Jim Harbaugh right now, if he goes to Michigan, to me it feels like it'll be because he doesn't like the options that are available to him in the NFL, whether it be Oakland or whatever else becomes available, and he chooses, all right, I'm going to go to Michigan because I don't like my options, and when I get done in Michigan, I'm going to go back to the NFL and do what I want to do with the team that I want to do it with. And Chip Kelly, I think, is where he wants to be right now, and he has a lot of the pieces in place that I think he would like to have. Maybe he still wants to go get a quarterback. I know he complained all offseason basically about Nick Foles, despite the numbers that Foles have put up last year.
Right.
And we're watching what Sanchez has done just in a couple weeks with that offense. Look, I think that Chip Kelly is right to say no to Florida at this point. I think Harbaugh's options are limited because Harbaugh has already rubbed a lot of people in that organization the wrong way. And we all kind of sensed that when things started going a little bit south in San Francisco, it was going to be quick with Harbaugh because he is such just an in-your-face, grind-it-out, just kind of a jerk, that when it went south with him, it was going to be out the door pretty quickly. And that's what we're seeing right now in San Francisco. That's a team that's still in the middle of a playoff race, and
right,
people are talking about their head coach potentially being traded because there's a lot of butting heads going on in that organization, in that locker room.
Well, at this point, it's seen as almost a certainty that he will not be back in San Francisco next
right
year. But, you know, you look at the scenario, if someone comes along, some team says, all right, we're going to give you X for him, right? Well, if you're Jim Harbaugh, you don't want to have one of those John Gruden deals go down where the team that is acquiring you, unless they're ready made to go to the Super Bowl, like the Tampa Bay Bucks were, and they're giving up future stuff, but you're taking over a team that is ready made to take that one next step.
No team that's been mentioned is close to that.
No team is close to that. So those teams can't afford to give up that kind of draft capital and come in and, great, you get the new head coach, but can he be successful if he doesn't have the raw material to work with? But, you know, in the end, Harbaugh could just say, hey, fire me, and you're going to have to pay me whatever's left on my contract if you don't want me here. I don't know. Stranger things have happened than Jim Harbaugh coming back to San Francisco next year. I will, for now, trust the NFL talking heads that say it is, you know, virtually a lock that he won't be. But I don't, you know, just looking at the situation from the outside, I think there are, you know, certainly worse situations that have gone on. I don't know how bad it is inside that building, but like you said, they're winning. It's not like he was a perennial playoff contender you're putting up with his BS and they fell off to a 4-12 season.
Right.
I mean, they're in the mix. Now, maybe coming up short of the postseason will be enough to get him canned or pushed out the door, however it all goes down. But
not even in that locker room, but it bothers me to watch him.
Yeah,
he's just one of those guys. It bothers me to watch him.
He's a get-under-your-skin kind of guy. There's no question about it. And if I had a strong feeling one way or the other about the San Francisco 49ers, I'd probably hate his guts, you know? But if he coached my team, I'd probably love him, you know? And that's okay. He's not out there to make friends. He's out there to win football games.
I don't know if I would. Like, honestly, if he coached my team, I don't know if I'd love him. I would appreciate the success that he's bringing to whatever team I was a fan of, but I think he would still just bother me with his antics. And look, that game on Thursday night last week on Thanksgiving night against Seattle, when they would go to the shots of him on the sideline just screaming and stamping his feet and all that, like that kind of stuff would bother me as a fan. Even if I was a fan of the team that he was coaching, it would be like, come on. I mean, you don't have to do it that way. There's other ways to get your point across.
That's a fair point. I mean, look, you could argue, you know, there were certainly, like, to take it back to a college perspective, probably, you know, just from what we've heard, Gator fans that didn't like Urban Meyer personally, but loved the success he had and weren't looking to push him out the door or anything like that. The guy brings you success, ultimately winning. I think you'll put up with an awful lot.
Oh, you will.
As far as that goes. You know, Tom Coughlin, by all accounts, players hated him to play for him early on, right? And it's not that Coughlin did anything outrageous or outlandish, but he was so militaristic about it. And when it was the late 90s, there wasn't a fan around that really cared. You know, I mean, it's not my problem. I don't have to go through training camp practice with Tom Coughlin. But by the end, they were upset because they felt that his ways had rubbed the locker room the wrong way after an accumulated period of time. And they cared because it impacted the outcome, finally. I don't know. I think you could put up with Jim Harbaugh if he came in and did his thing. By the way, Dallas on the outside looking in. You're grinning right now.
I looked at their schedule.
They could go 8-8 again.
They could lose all four of these games, and I would.
They're on the road for three of them.
Love to see Week 17 flexed, just so we could watch Dallas once again on Sunday Night Football in front of the whole nation.
I'll say this though: if they don't win, if they lose their next three, I think they'll be out of the playoff picture by then anyway.
Right.
You know, I don't think that game will matter. It won't be a win and you're in scenario because you already have three teams in the NFC that have 9 wins. You've got two other teams that are at 8 wins. They just lose the tiebreaker to Seattle and Detroit. So presuming if Seattle and Detroit can each win a couple of games in this last month, then Dallas is going to have to do something more on top of that to get into the postseason. But when you look, Tony, about midway part of the season, they were probably the hottest team in football. And
well, coming out of that Seattle game, there were people saying that's the best team in football.
And I think rightfully so at that time.
And they beat the Giants there at home, which is something that, honestly, Dallas had struggled to do to this point since they opened up that new building, is beat the Giants there in Dallas. But they get that win. And was it the next week that they played the Redskins on Monday night and lost in overtime? I think it was. I think they were 6-1 when Washington came to town, and Washington beat them, and then they lost to Arizona, which there's no shame in losing to Arizona this year. And then they had the game in London and the Giants, and then last week against Philadelphia. But it's, you can feel these swoons with the Cowboys coming, and for a team that the strength had been the entire time their offensive line, it got completely demolished by Philadelphia last week. And for the most part of that game against the Giants, it did too. In the fourth quarter, we can all remember the couple plays there at the end of the game where Tony Romo had a month to figure out what to do with the ball. But that was the only time in that game that he had that kind of time. I mean, they really got handled in that one as well on that offensive line, which is not something you could say before that this year with Dallas. If that's going to become an issue, they're going to have real problems winning down the stretch.
Honestly, they have to get ahead of them because they lost head-to-head, but I think Arizona's the team that could fade here. Just, you know, look at the quarterback situation. The offense is in a shambles right now.
You got that charging team behind him, too.
Right. You've got Seattle coming up, and they get the Seahawks one more time. That one will be in Arizona. But the Seahawks have the scent right now, and they look like closers. Other end of the standings, by the way, Jags would still hold the number two pick in the draft, despite their second win of the season. Three teams with two wins. Oakland, obviously, in the catbird seat as far as the draft goes, following their 52-0 pasting at the hands of the St. Louis Rams. Jacksonville, by virtue of the head-to-head with Tennessee, which they lost, and they lose the tiebreaker with the Jets. I'm guessing maybe conference record is probably what comes in there, but they would have the second overall pick as of right now. I think that'll change. You and I were just talking on the break. I think they'll beat Tennessee, right? We both expect that at this point in time. I mean, you almost beat them on the road as far as that went. They just lost Justin Hunter for the year. Zach Mettenberger is expected to play, and he has improved their passing game when he's been in there. Jake Locker was miserable coming off the bench last week, but split with Houston is certainly doable, and that gets you to four, and I think that's a reasonable expectation for the last month of the season.
I do too.
You could get more. You could sweep Houston. I think they can beat the Ravens. I think that's going to be the toughest game. Certainly on paper, it's the toughest game in the last four. But I think there are opportunities there, and I do think they'll grab at least one, if not two more. I'm thinking, you know, if I had to bet, I would bet 2-2. Lauren Brooks said that's what she picked last night on Helmets and Heels. I would tend to agree with that. Split
All right.
with Houston. Well, whether it comes this week or week 17, home or road, I think they can get one of those two.
Yeah, I want the home wins.
I'll take them. Look, get the home win, because then you still get to play the road game, and maybe you get them both at that point in time. So,
mm-hmm. And the people that I meet with for tailgating are always happier once we've won at home.
That's a good point.
And then that's when I get to bring you food.
That's an even better point. all right, let's step aside. Dr. Stephen Lucy going to join us momentarily from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. We'll get the latest on the injury front for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Take a look at the fan feedback spotlight asking you today that when you look at the Jaguar depth chart, which three positions do you think are in the biggest need of an upgrade coming up this offseason? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, so Metro Rooter Wednesday. Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, in-home, in your business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it, they handle it. Same-day service, weekends included, with the right people and the right equipment. Metro Rooter has been serving Jacksonville since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 if you have any plumbing issues. I did at my house, had the boys out for Metro Rooter. They took care of it with great customer service and did a fantastic job. Did it right the first time at a very affordable price, and they'll do the same for you. Just give them a call, 695-1911. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. All right, let's go to the Garber Auto Mall hot seat and welcome in from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, Dr. Stephen Lucy, with this week's injury report. Hi, Doc. How are you?
I'm great.
How was Thanksgiving?
It was a lot of fun, a little drawn out. I had both my boys in, and had a great weekend.
That turkey, I imagine, is beyond repair at this point. No matter of orthopedic help can help that turkey, I'm imagining.
Skin carcass. Finished up the pecan pie last night.
Pecan. All right. See, pecan, pecan, whatever. It doesn't matter to me, so it's just interesting to see which way everybody goes on that whole.
That's Georgia pronunciation.
It's like when we were in New Orleans and it was a praline.
Oh, that's right. It's praline.
It's a praline.
You mean those pralines you're serving up there?
It's a praline. Yeah, because I asked some guy on the corner. I was like, hey, where can I get a good praline? And he was like, you mean a praline, son? I was like, yeah, I guess
sure,
so.
Sure, that's what I mean. Absolutely, that's what I mean.
Yeah, point me in the right direction, buddy.
All right. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians, by the way, at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. And with that, the Jacksonville Jaguars are without their starting right tackle, Doc, Austin Pastor, a torn hamstring. It sounds bad. It sounds certainly incredibly painful. Prognosis for a full and complete recovery.
You know, he went down like a shot, and this is an unusual injury when you tear it off the bone. The first one of these that I can remember, an NFL guy that we were affiliated with John Yurkovich back in the day, had one, and we hadn't seen many of them. He went up to Cleveland, and he got his fix, and I think he came back and played another season or so. I think he was with Cleveland. I can't remember. But Our guys at JOI just repaired his today. Dr. Kaplan, Dr. Crenshaw told me it was very successful. They tack it back to the bone where it pulls off, and that's a long rehab, but he should be ready to go by camp.
Yeah, off the bone. Anything off the bone sounds pretty devastating.
Well, you know, when people come into the office and they've pulled a muscle or they've torn a muscle, when the muscle tears in the mid portion, it's like two ends of a mop. There's not much you can do with it. You can't really sew up a mop and you can't sew up the muscle. So we almost never repair surgically anything that's not pulled off the bone. But when you get a tendon pulled off the bone, we've talked about biceps at the elbow. In this case, there are three hamstrings that attach up kind of where you sit. If you feel down that bone where you're sitting, that's where they attach. When they pull off that way, they gap. And when they gap, they don't get as strong of attachment. And somebody like an NFL offensive line that needs all the power he can get, those are the kind of guys that need it tacked back on so that they can get a full recovery.
By the way, good call on Yurko. Did finish his career with a season in Cleveland in 1999, last year of his career. Good memory there, Doc. Jadeveon Clowney doesn't appear like he'll be playing. No offense to your colleague, Dr. Andrews, but he is like the Grim Reaper when your name is associated with him. It's not good news. Now, it's good because he's very good at what he does, and he'll fix you up, but it means you're having a serious problem if you have to go see him. He's become kind of the go-to guy in terms of sports medicine goes, but torn meniscus for Clowney, says he's still dealing with a lot of pain. It just doesn't feel right in there. You've had one. I've had one. This guy puts a lot more stress on his knee than we do. You think ultimately this is destined for surgery for him?
You know, it's hard to say. This is one of these things that can go so well. You know, I've seen him come back and play in 8 to 10 days after one of these. But on the other hand, depending on what other injuries, whether there was cartilage damage in addition to the meniscus, they can also drag out. With these guys, as much stress as they put on, they typically do take a little longer. Javon Clowney's has taken longer than even the longest one, and that's why they want a second opinion. The medial meniscus, most common, easier to recover from. The lateral meniscus, a little longer. We don't know the details here, but hopefully, Dr. Andrews, this will be a pat on the head and maybe some medicine. And he's had a frustrating year. You know, such a good player. He's been struggling all year. I hope they can get him back to, but not this weekend.
Or really, if he wants to come back next year, that's fine. We got a couple more matchups with the Texans still to go here in this last month of the season.
Good point.
Just overall, this year compared to past years, certainly, you know, Paul Posluszny would argue that injuries are not down. I mean, the injuries happen, but are they, for this Jaguar team, pretty consistent with the rate we've seen in recent years? A little ahead, a little below? You know, how do you compare 2014 to recent years?
Well, you know, whenever you get down to the end of the season, the healthiest teams are usually in the playoffs, and you'll always have a team that has a great team but was devastated by injuries. I was talking to Dr. Kaplan about all these muscle injuries, and he tells me in talking around that it seems to be an epidemic this year around the league, and it may just be the downside to bigger, stronger, faster.
Right.
You know, and that's what we're seeing, that these guys have worked so hard and get so strong, get so fast that they're just kind of overcoming their muscles and tendons. But, you know, I think Jaguars really have had kind of an average year.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been...
It certainly hasn't seemed like it's been a devastating wave. We had, you know, that wave of wide receivers who couldn't stay on the field in the offseason, but none of those were, you know, the season-ending type crippling thing, with the exception of Tandon Doss, obviously, in, you know, more thought of as a punt returner. But, you know, yeah, I haven't had the impression. Sometimes you have that impression like, man, this team is just snake bit. And there have been years when the Jags have had the most players on IR of any team in the league.
Oh, yeah, not in a few years ago that was the case, but I think it just comes in spurts. You know, one year you may have four ACLs in a team, the next year you'll have none. Same turf, same team, you know, it's just luck of the draw, I guess.
All right, he is Dr. Stephen Lucy, again, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, and Dr. Lucy appears in the Garber Auto Mall hot seat with us every Wednesday. Doc, have a great day. Appreciate you stopping in. Hopefully an uneventful week for you from a team injury perspective.
Absolutely.
There he goes. Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you as we come down the stretch. Tony, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking Jag fans, looking at the depth chart, which three positions do you think are crying out for the biggest upgrade or in the biggest need of an upgrade? What do we get?
Here we go from at Irish Jaguar, middle linebacker, free safety, and tight end.
I agree with tight end.
I do too. And free safety may be on my list as well. It's at least hovering around there. From Hodaru, we got offensive tackle, tight end, and free safety. From Eric, linebacker, free safety, and yes, the offensive line all need the most help. Can I say tight ends too? We need a lot. From Kevin, both offensive tackles, linebackers, secondary as a whole, we have backups, need the starters, if that makes sense. From Christoph, linebackers, depth, need to add speed. Offensive line needs to get a nasty attitude. Safeties need to be impact players. And from Magnatia, we got center, offensive tackle, running back. Need experienced anchors on that line. Miss Rashad, polls are for strippers. When and we're in Knowles. There you go.
Oh, polls for, it took me a moment to see what that was in reference to, but I totally agree.
Yeah.
With that sentiment right now. Don't forget you can vote, by the way, for your Week 13 nominees at NFL.com. The Pepsi Rookie of the Week, Aaron Colvin, one of five nominees for that. And the GMC Never Say Never Moment of the Week, Blake Bortles, one of three nominees for that one, along with Philip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers. What were the odds Philip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers get more votes than Blake Bortles? I'm guessing people will just vote just because, it's Aaron Rodgers. Let's vote for him. Who knows? Vote early, vote often. Go to NFL.com and support those Jags. Congrats to Scobie, Josh Scobie, the special teams player of the week.
Yeah.
In the AFC for the eighth time. That is amazing to me that he's won it eight times. I know he's been around for quite a while, but that's a bunch of
good
games.
On you.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. For me, tight end would be on the short list. And look, I know everyone talks about Mercedes' great combination of, you know, athleticism, and he can help you in the passing game, he can help you in the running game. Let's be honest, for most of his career, with the exception of his 10-touchdown season, hasn't he been about more potential than actual production as a receiver, at least? He's certainly been a benefit in the running game over the years. I'm not saying he's been a complete detriment in the passing game, but right now, I know it's only two games back, and he was out for most of the year, but he's been practicing now. He's been on the practice field for a month. You've yet to see any indication, and, you know, we'll see. Maybe over these last 4 weeks, he and Blake can develop a little bit of chemistry heading into the offseason.
Well, it's a different world in the NFL. Can you name a lot of explosive offenses that don't have somebody at the tight end position? I mean, I get Green Bay doesn't have a ton there right now, but they've had Finley there for a long time.
Sure, and traditionally Green Bay has been one of the most productive teams right. In terms of tight end.
But there's not a lot of really good offenses in the league that don't have a productive receiving tight end.
Right, a receiving tight end.
Right, and Mercedes isn't giving them that right now. He may be helping the team with whatever role they have him playing, but that doesn't mean that they can't get somebody. You got the quarterback that you think is going to be the future of your organization. It's time to start surrounding him with the weapons that can help this offense soar. And right now, they don't have anybody at the tight end position that can.
Right now, right.
Right now.
And we'll see how they address that, or if they address that in the offseason. Offensive line, I mean, you can really point to any number of spots. When you say in need of the biggest upgrade, well, I mean, Luke Joeckel hasn't played great, but they're not upgrading from Luke Joeckel, right? They're not going out and spending a high pick on a left tackle. I know there's some sentiment out there to hit the reset button at that position. It's not going to happen this offseason. There are just certain things that are not going to happen, and that's one of them. They're not going to reset the strong safety position, but Jonathan Cyprien needs to play a lot better next year.
Yes, he does.
Those are two that you hope upgrade individually, themselves. Just get better. Hey, Luke Joeckel, you take the good view on it. He's only played 16 games as a pro, 16 full games as a pro. He's just at the end of his rookie year in terms of playing time. So take some of the things that he learned, go into the offseason, get stronger, get better, and show some improvement on the field next year.
And you want to talk about room for growth, that's a guy who's going to get to stare at J.J. Watt twice over the last month of the season.
I agree.
You talk about just being thrown into the fire. I mean,
that whole line, they're all going to get a taste of J.J. Watt, right. You have a feeling, this week. Let's see how they
do. It's good. It's a good thing for a young offensive line that they're trying to evaluate. I think several spots on that line still, it's a good thing to have that kind of test coming up here over the last month, especially with the Houston team that is still in the middle of a playoff race in their minds. I mean, this is a really good test for that line of scrimmage to see where they're at.
He has wrecked a lot of game plans so far this year. All right, that does it for us. Thanks again to Dr. Stephen Lucy, courtesy of the Garber Automall Hot Seat right here on Jaguars Today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Big thanks to D-Rock, Mike DiRocco from ESPN.com. Covers your Jacksonville Jaguars on a daily basis. Look for his writing, as I know you always do, and at ESPN DiRocco on Twitter. Subbing in for Mark Long today, who's in Gainesville covering the Florida head coaching vacancy story. Will it be filled by Jim McElwain later on today? A lot of people think that, in fact, will be the case. In fact, that may occur over the next 3 hours, and you'll find out about it first if you keep it tuned to XL Primetime. Those guys are coming up next. So for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, certainly for Mike DiRocco and Mark Long, I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today on this Wednesday. XL Primetime next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.